So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 23, The Brahmin's Wives Blessed. Texts, numbers 10 and 11. What's on the board? Just one verse? Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Desha, Kala, Pratag, Dravyam, Mantra, Tantra, Vijo, Nayaha, Devata, Yajamanas, Cha, Kratur, Dharmash, Cha, Yan, Mayaha, Deshakalar Pitag Dravyam, Mantra, Tartrat, Vijo, Naya. Devata yajamanascha, kratur dharmascha yan mayaha, desha, the place, kalaha, time, taktravyam, particular items of paraphernalia, mantra, Vedic hymns, Tantra, prescribed rituals, Ritvijaha, priests, Agnayaha, sacrificial fires, Devataha, the presiding demigods, Yajamanaha, the performer of the sacrifice, Cha, and Kratuhu, the offering, Dharmaha, the invisible power of fruit of results, Cha, and Yat, whom, Mayaha, constituting, translation and purport, by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Although the ingredients of sacrificial performance, the place, time, particular paraphernalia, mantras, rituals, priests, fires, demigods, performer, offering, and the as yet unseen beneficial results are simply aspects of His opulences. The Brahmins, so Lord Krishna, as an ordinary human because of their perverted intelligence. They fail to recognize that He is the Supreme Absolute Truth, the directly manifest personality of Godhead, whom the material senses cannot ordinarily perceive. Thus, bewildered by their false identification with the mortal body, they did not show Him proper respect. Report. The ritualistic Brahmins could not understand why the sacrificial food should be offered to Lord Krishna, whom they considered an ordinary human being. Just as a person with rose-colored glasses sees the entire world as rose-colored, a conditioned soul with mundane vision sees even God Himself as mundane and thus loses the opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead. Gyanatamrandasya yananjana salakaya chakshu nimitam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So we'll speak a little bit on this verse, and then we'll continue reading the Vyasa Puja offerings. This is my last day here, so this will probably conclude the readings of the offerings of the devotees, unless someone wants to read some more. So we have some very nice offerings to read today. Stay tuned. And first we'll speak a little bit on this verse. So that the point is that, well, one point is that the Brahmins were seeing Lord Krishna as, due to their pride, which resulted in their material vision, they were seeing Lord Krishna as an ordinary boy. And as is explained, only not that many people understood that Krishna was God when he was present on the planet. I think Prabhupada mentioned the number 200, something like that. So we're so fortunate, even we weren't there when Krishna appeared, we can understand transcendental nature of his appearance and activities. At least we're beginning to understand. And there's nothing like it without Krishna in our lives. There's no hope. There's no future. There is a future, but it's very bleak, as we read in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes the hellish planets. And also, we see in our own lives and the lives of others on this planet how hellish things can become in this world, or perhaps have been in this world for us. So there's no escape other than the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga. So it's very nice, that phrase, going back to home, back to Godhead. You all must have a place. Well, you all have homes. I don't have a home. But you have a place where if you've been away for a long time, you finally come back home, you feel really comfortable, right? Everything's just the way you want it, more or less, right? And you feel so comfortable. You can just be yourself, right? Just relax completely. It's a wonderful feeling, especially if you've been away for a long time. So when we read that phrase, going back to home, back to Godhead, Prabhupada just doesn't say go back to Godhead or go back to the spiritual world or go to heaven. Krishna's talking about going to heaven. Prabhupada says going back to home, back to Godhead. So you really feel at home. Like we've come to a point where we really feel at home chanting Hare Krishna, right? Day after day after day. You don't feel at home chanting some mundane song day after day after day, because it doesn't give you what you really want. And we know that, and we felt to one degree or another, that the Hare Krishna mantra is everything we've always wanted. Krishna's there, his devotees are there, spiritual world is there, everything is there, just like Prabhupada describes that in relation to Jai Radha Madhava as well, right? Perfect picture of the spiritual world. So it's like that when we're focusing like that, we feel completely satisfied and completely at home, because that's the ultimate repose of the soul. So it's so nice that Prabhupada uses that phrase, if we think about it a little bit, back to home, back to Godhead. That's our real home. That's where we feel most comfortable of anywhere else we can imagine. So, seeing the world through rose-colored glasses, depending on whatever mode of material nature is influencing a person, that's how that person sees the world, right? person's influenced by the mode of ignorance, he'll focus on certain things, have various conceptions of life within the mode of, that are influenced by the mode of ignorance. And so there are so many philosophies out there. If you go to a bookstore, look on the internet, you see it's philosophies in the mode of ignorance, right? Lots of them. Philosophies in the mode of passion, philosophies in the mode of goodness, so many different combinations. So because these philosophies, they're based on the speculations of people who are materialistically involved, and they're affected by the modes. Then those who are affected more by the mode of goodness have these various impersonal philosophies, a little tinge of spirituality. So what a devotee presents or can present is something that's far beyond the modes of material nature. And that's what's so wonderful about absorbing ourselves in Prabhupada's books. Everything we read, everything we hear, everything we meditate on in Srila Prabhupada's books, it's completely transcendental, no influence at all of the modes of material nature. So this is the nectar, rasayana. Satam prasangam mama virya samvido bhavanti hritkarna rasayana katha. That this Krishna katha, especially when we discuss it, churning the nectar like that, get it out into the ether. It's nectar for the ear, rasayana, rasa, for the ear and for the heart. Because it's completely beyond the modes of material nature. It's unalloyed goodness. There's no contamination at all, just pure nectar. How was the kirtan today, Prabhu? Oh, it's nectar. Pure nectar. Pure nectar. So that's why it tastes so good. No influence of the modes. Or you come into the temple room, it's like that. So it's so nice when people come for the first time. Of course, you can't really tell how they're being affected because you can't see their minds or their hearts. But some people describe, and we also remember, for those of us who weren't brought up in India, who came into the temple for the first time. Very special atmosphere. And of course, coming into the Hare Krishna temple where Prabhupada is there, where the deities are there, where the ether is permeated by the influence of the Hare Krishna mantra and the Vaishnavas. Very special. Very special. Beyond the modes of material nature. So the Brahmins, they were way off in another direction. They were just thinking it's just another botheration in their lives. Trying to do their sacrifices. And all this botheration. So we certainly should never be on that platform. And we have to see when Krishna wants to come. Sometimes we're doing something and we get so-called interrupted. That interruption is actually Krishna knocking on the door of our hearts to let him in one way or another. So many times that happens. We're focused in one way. And because we're following the rules and regulations without understanding the purpose behind them, that's one way that we can fall to a lower platform. If we're doing that and Krishna comes knocking on our door in some way, we won't recognize him. We're not recognizing him in the Hare Krishna mantra. We're not recognizing him so many ways because our focus is wrong. Even though we're following the rules and regulations of Vaishnava behavior, still, because our hearts aren't there, our consciousness is somewhere else, or we're doing it mechanically, then we won't understand when Krishna is beckoning us, like he was beckoning the Brahmins to snap out of it and do some devotional service with their hearts. So, can anyone give an example of that? Has that ever happened to you? Or you're at the Sunday feast with your hand in your bead bag mumbling your rounds while everything else is going on because you have a few rounds left, and a guest comes to the door just wondering what's going on, and you walk the other way as fast as you can because you still have a round and a half to chant. And the guest is just there wondering, what, you know, where am I, wondering what's going on here. I'd really like to know. Or something like that. We had a very nice meeting last night about the Sunday feast. And all the devotees spoke just what they felt it should be like, could be like, what could be improved and so on. It was a wonderful meeting. About 20, 25 devotees came. And so that kind of thing is on my mind. I guess that's why I gave the example. So, anyone else give an example? I knew you would. Yes. Microphone. How fast can you get from there to there, Prabhu? That's all?
When I was walking to the Sunday feast this Sunday, a woman pulled over. I was on Graham walking from Nitai Chen's place. She pulled over and said, "Can you tell me where the Krishna temple is?" And I said, "Oh, you're just so close. Just right, take a right and you're right there." So when I was in the program on Sunday, I saw her standing by Prabhupada and brought her up close to the deities.
Oh, very nice.
Take darshan. And she said, "So many mantras are being chanted. You know, maybe this isn't the time to learn the main mantra." And so I showed her the, you know, the written Hare Krishna mantra and chanted with her a few times, and then she got it and she was chanting along with the kirtan. It was
great.
Really nice.
Wonderful. Krishna sent you there to help her. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, last night we were talking about one of the things we do and we used to do in San Diego and we do in Buenos Aires, we have a Sunday feast program guide. Like they do in churches, you know. And of course, we try to limit the chanting of other mantras too, so that people can focus on Hare Krishna. That's what Prabhupada wanted. So we're talking about all these things. It was a very enlivening meeting, and I think some nice improvements will come from it. So, does anyone have an example of where you could have answered Krishna's call, but you were too preoccupied with doing something that, even though it wasn't as important, but you chose not to answer Krishna's call, like the Brahmins had chosen here? Example.
When one of my close friends, we live in the same apartment before I devoted to joining this movement.
One of your close friends living with you before you were devoted?
The same building. He's living fifth floor. I was living ground floor.
Oh, he was on the fifth floor. You were on the ground floor.
Yes. So he saw my lifestyle. So every day he always go to ISKCON temple. And he became devotee, practicing. So he tried to encourage me. So I was not interested at all. So he used to knock my door in the morning, wake me up, and give massage. And I said, "Man, he's every morning disturbing so much." So I have to, some or other, I just feel not to make him, you know, bad. So just open the door, and he come in. And the morning is the time, really, sleeping time, because I used to sleep at like 3 o'clock at night. A group of friends spend time. So he is doing almost 2-3 months like that. So he gave me Srila Prabhupada self-realization book. So I just looked at Srila Prabhupada picture and book and I just kept it like that. And he said, "After 2 weeks, I'm going to take the book back again. You read it and give it back to me." So after 2 weeks, he came, "Did you read the book?" I'm going, "No, I didn't get the chance. Please take it." So I gave him. After 4 years, it's really, and then I went to look for that friend where he is. I was passing through ISKCON temple. And then just curious.
So you became a devotee then?
No.
Oh.
No, after four years. After,
still
I
did, not?
No. 4 years was not really I seen him or I never were interested in ISKCON temple. So then one time I was passing through ISKCON temple. Then I was curious because I saw one time his shaved head. So I said, let's find out where he is now. Because he was working in a big company, then suddenly he just shaved his head, and I said, maybe he's crazy. So then after 4 years, I was going to rickshaw, so I stopped rickshaw wala and said, stop over here. So I went inside, I said, do you know where that guy, he was?
Speak louder, sir.
I'm saying, do you know where that guy, his name was Hori Prem, where he is now? He said, yeah, he's in another center, in our ISKCON center, he's not here. So I say, okay, fine. So I started to leave. And that time one devotee really caught me and he said, wait, you're going to leave right now? I'm like, yes. So is there anything I can do for you? I say, no, my rickshaw is waiting. So then they say, okay, take a little prasad. So we, in India, always we honor prasad, some other. So I say, okay, so how long it takes? 2 minutes. So 2 minutes, it took me 15 minutes to just asking, do you are interested in anything, this, that. So then I really came close to him that he really defeated me a few points. That was asking a question. And then after I tried to become devotee, then I realized Krishna really sent 4 years back.
Uh-huh.
So I did not really listen that devotee. So.
But finally you did.
I found it.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, finally the Brahmins listened also. But they had to get hit over the head a little bit. Yes, Prabhu.
You know, initially in devotional service, it's quite simple to make distinctions. Like, you know, okay, don't eat, you know, meat, just take prasadam, you know, and so forth. But as you become more advanced, it becomes more difficult to make decisions on exactly how you should use your time and energy, and especially there's a lot of different projects, priorities, all these different types of things. I was wondering, could you give us some insight on how to, you know, make those spiritual decisions?
Hmm. Well, I always try to think, what would Prabhupada want me to do? And of course, we're not always absolutely sure, but sometimes we get confirmation. Not only would it be pleasing to Guru, but also according to Shastra, according to the sadhus, according to the need of the time, and also according to my personal abilities and personal inclinations. Sometimes there's a great need, and it's obvious that we should try to focus in a certain way. Becomes obvious because of the advice of our senior God brothers, and it just becomes obvious because of the need. When it's not so obvious, when we could either do A or B, perhaps it doesn't matter so much what we choose. But we also have to choose according to how I feel I'll be able to be Krishna conscious in any given activity. And of course, for a grihastha, you have to consider so many things. You have to consider your wife, your children, your financial situation, your time, etc. So everybody's situation is different. I always, when Srila Gurudev was here, whenever I would make some decision, especially a big decision, I would always talk to him first. Because there are certain people we have faith in, and it's always very helpful, very important to take help from them, advice from them, hear what they have to say, because sometimes our desires, our way of seeing things is not so accurate because we're so emotionally involved. So others, often they can see us in a more objective way. Not that the emotions don't count, but sometimes they cloud over our ability to see things clearly, just like Arjuna was very much clouded over. So, would you like to add to that, or just like when Maharaj Parikit was about to fast on the banks of, sometimes it said the Ganges, sometimes it said the Yamuna. When he was about to fast, Prabhupada writes in that purport, because he was, let's see, was it, yeah, it was that situation. Prabhupada said, whatever decision we make in devotional service should be, we should get the blessings of our superiors, blessings of the devotees. It's very nice to do that. Not just, I'm going to do this, please give me your blessings. That's one way to get blessings. Another way is to ask advice and take blessings like that. Or take permission. Just like when you're leaving someone's house, the etiquette is to take permission. What to speak of when you're doing something more important than that. Anything else before we move on?
I just had like a technical question about the appearance of Krishna and Balaram, and just when they appeared, their physical appearance. Have you ever read or heard anything about how they explain that away, their unusual physical appearance?
In what sense? How they appeared or what they looked like?
Yeah, Lord Balaram's color, Krishna's color, their height, you know.
Yeah, Prabhupada things. Explained. One devotee asked Prabhupada why Krishna's blue, why Krishna's blue, or why he has a peacock feather. Now I'm forgetting. But the point is that Prabhupada said we shouldn't question the likes and dislikes of Krishna. So this is what Krishna likes. Everything he does is because he likes to do it. It's all happening by his own sweet will. So I'm also told that blue is the color of, was it prema? They were like, gold is the color of prema and blue is the color of, just reading it, because I took notes on Shivaram Swami's lecture. He was talking a little bit about this. I was reading it a few weeks ago. Something like transcendental bliss, it's the color of something like that. Just like Radharani is golden, color of prema. And and why Krishna wears a peacock feather? Well, at least one time, he was dancing so nicely before everyone in the forest, including the peacocks. The king of peacocks presented him with a peacock feather. He put it in his hair. So, and we eat to please ourselves. We dress to please others. So, coward boys, Mother Yasoda, the gopis, they're always dressing Krishna in very pleasing ways. And Krishna's very happy. Sometimes he dresses himself to disguise himself. So Lord Balaram is white because white is the color of. Does anyone remember reading that? Excuse me? Yeah, but just like golden is the color of prema, etc., etc. I don't know. I don't want to speculate. I was just wondering if anyone... So I wish I could remember what Shivaram Swami was saying about Krishna's color, but I'll have to look it up again. Nice question. Helps us think about Krishna. Okay, we still have some time. I have to leave a little early. I have to go to Flower Mound, but I'd like to read some of these offerings. and also say a few words because it's my last class. A nice sweet offering from Kadambakanana Swami. Does anyone know Kadambakanana Swami? Wonderful devotee. Dear Srila Prabhupada, please accept my most humble obeisances. All glories to your divine grace. It is amazing to observe the growth of Lord Chaitanya's wish-fulfilling desire tree. What is he referring to there? ISKCON. Recently, I was in Tompkins Square Park, New York. The city council has put a sign on the tree where you stood and held public kirtan. Does anyone know what the sign says? The sign reads, Hare Krishna tree.
Hare Krishna tree.
Right. And off to the side, there is another sign reading, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder of the Hare Krishna movement, began his public chanting under this tree. How many of you have seen the tree? So many people have seen the tree. They don't realize it.
There's a beautiful picture up there.
Right. A Prabhupada chant. Yeah, Prabhupada chanting under the tree, yes. As I stood under the tree, a young man of about 20 came up to me and asked, what would I have to do to become a monk? I could see how you have invested that place with your mercy. And the fact that I could be there and appreciate all that instead of being lost in the material wilderness means that I have been a recipient of your mercy. Your movement has grown to enormous proportions all over the world. And in India especially, Krishna consciousness is booming. It really is. It's amazing. It's amazing what's going on there. Through you, the branches of the Chaitanya tree have spread everywhere. Those branches that very carefully follow your teachings, will flourish and produce wonderful fruits. And those branches that are not serious in following you will dry up or break due to foolish independence. Through you, I've come to explore the amazing world of bhakti. And as I learn more about our tradition, practices, and philosophy, more about the spiritual world, about Krishna's Rasa Leela and so many other exalted topics, I realize that I am a dwarf. No matter how learned, how experienced, how powerful I have become or will become, I know that success or failure in spiritual life simply depends on very carefully serving your lotus feet. There is nothing else. Hoping to remain dedicated to you and to increase my service in quantity and purity. Kadambakanana Swami. I noticed that all these offerings are so nice. And very often the offerings that attract attention are offerings where there's a little anecdote, you know, some experience the devotee is relating, and he ties that into glorifying Prabhupada in some way. All the offerings are very nice, the ones that are highly philosophical and very detailed in so many ways that make beautiful points. So we shouldn't minimize those in any way. But just like devotees like stories. You know, when you tell a story in class, either an anecdote or Krishna's pastimes, everybody starts paying attention. They want to know, well, what happened next, and after that, what's the conclusion? Excuse me? Yeah, Krishna woke up from his dream. It's nice. It's such a nice way to give the philosophy. So Maharaj was doing that here. And it's interesting, you wonder how he's going to tie it in to glorifying Prabhupada. Of course, it wasn't such a mystery here at all. Who's got the mic? There it is right here.
On this point about becoming monks, the young person asking him about becoming a monk, during the Warp Tour, every day we'd have at least like a half dozen, you know, young people ask us the same question, you know, how do I become a monk? Is there a way, you know, what do I get trained up? What do I do, you know?
That's great.
I mean, there's really an interest, I feel, amongst the young people, you know, in general, there's such an interest in yoga and meditation, yeah, and spirituality, but, I mean, especially taking up that type of lifestyle.
Yeah. And of course, someone who's interested in yoga, that's nice, but it's especially nice if someone's interested in becoming a monk. Because for a lot of people, yoga doesn't mean spirituality or religion, religious behavior, changing one's behavior, but becoming a monk certainly means that. And in 1979, we had a dinner program in San Diego. We'd invite everybody we'd meet on Sangatan to our dinner. It became very, very popular. And the most popular advertisement we did, we would always advertise it. We'd have these little cards we placed in music stores, head shops. I don't know if anybody knows what a head shop is. And all sorts of alternative type places, and everywhere we possibly could, actually. And the title of the invitation was Monk Food is In. Monk Food's In. In other words, it's popular. And so many people came because of that. So not just now and not just when the movement started, but all the time, there are a class of people that are attracted to becoming a monk. And so we should definitely provide an opportunity for them to do so. And another thing on the Warp Tour is what Narottam Prabhu was going to explain right now. Weren't you going to say something now?
We put up a website called krishnamonks.com. We're working on it right now, a group of us that went on the Warp Tour. But we were looking in the dictionary for the definition of a monk, you know, and it's pretty funny because, you know, the basic definition of being a monk is like, you know, the typical Friar Tuck and the, you know, the like Robin Hood's merry followers, and, you know, and it gives an explanation about, you know, guys who are dedicated to, you know, spirituality, but at the same time go to bars and drink and so forth, you know. And it was interesting because when you'd have conversations with people, you know, they'd say, okay, why? What's the tilak mean? We'd say, oh, it means the body is a temple of God. And I remember there was one organizer for the event, and he was saying, really? He said, I feel like my body's like a nightclub.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he was. We had a rapport going, you know, on the descriptions.
Yeah.
But the definition, I mean, the kids, when they would talk with us, it was mostly they would see us as Buddhist monks.
Right.
They identify us pretty much like as the Dalai Lama, like
right,
we're followers of the Dalai
right
Lama. So that's
not so much the Friar Tuck type monks.
No, but if you look in the dictionary, that's the deal.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. Did they mention Friar Tuck?
Yeah,
They mentioned Friar Tuck? I can't believe it. He's not even like a real person. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's okay, the robes with the rope, but as far as alcohol, well, nowadays, with the reputations going around about priests and so on, so, yeah, it's nice to, I know dressing as a monk, amazing things always happen, going through the airports or when you're walking around, there's so much respect that's given, especially if we dress nicely and look nice. And we need to. Otherwise, and we always try to train the brahmacharis like that, because people have a certain conception of monks. And if someone's dressed like a monk but looks very sloppy and et cetera, that's not what we want to show. We can have a whole week of classes on these types of things, but it's nice. It's nice to show ourselves in society as monks, and monkettes also, because we do have, what would you call a female monk? I was going to say monkees, but that doesn't, okay. So, well, we'll see. We'll see. So Narottam Prabhu is embarking on a wonderful program to reel these monks in. Right. Okay. So I have to leave a little early today because of that appointment. I'll read one more offering. This is Sachinandan Swami. He's always absorbed in kirtan, for kirtan festivals. He's cultivating some of these big kirtan leaders in the world who aren't devotees yet, but some are becoming devotees. Dear Srila Prabhupada offers his obeisances. With gratitude, we join the large chorus of millions of voices who glorify you on your divine appearance day. The three worlds resound as devotees and others recite your numerous qualities with joy in their hearts. They all know that a pure devotee of the Lord, who is 100% surrendered to the will of Sri Krishna, is extremely rare, and that only he can fulfill the purpose of creation to bring fallen souls back to their original God consciousness. Such a liberated soul is no longer subject to the laws of karma. Then he quotes Sanskrit translation. A Vaishnav does not take birth under the jurisdiction of karmic law. His birth and appearance are transcendental. The wise have declared that the servants of Vishnu are eternally engaged in the liberated service of the Lord, and therefore free from the laws of material nature. That's Hari Bhakti Vilas quoted from the Padma Purana. Your main tool in spreading Krishna consciousness was definitely to engage the fallen souls in chanting the holy names. In your own words, I have not come to teach you, but only to request you to please chant the name of God. That's from the Science of Self-Realization. So our request to all, another quote, we are requesting all over the world the same thing. Please, chant this Hare Krishna mantra. Be cleansed in your consciousness and understand your spiritual identity. It's a lecture, Rome, 1974. This year when I visited Shiva Sangam, okay, another story. You ready? This year when I visited Srivasangam, where the kirtan of Mahaprabhu started. How many of you have been there? Very special place. It's my favorite place. This year when I visited Srivasangam, where the kirtan of Mahaprabhu started, I was overcome with gratitude towards you. as we were reading from the Chaitanya Bhagavat about those early nocturnal kirtans, I could see how you have kindly taken the chanting out of India and distributed it all over the world. I remember a film of you in Tompkins Square Park, New York, where you chanted unassumingly under a tree surrounded by dozens of curious young Americans. Suddenly, you briefly opened your eyes. And I was struck by the tremendous power that burst forth. It was clear that you were just about to fulfill your big vision. You were releasing a flood wave of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, which was soon to spread its influence all over the world. Not only were you recruiting new devotees, no, you wanted them to be part of Sri Chaitanya's mission and yours. No, you wanted them to be part of Sri Chaitanya's mission and yours. The main means in the mission. And now that's it has a colon after that. So the main means in the mission, you say. Once, towards the end of his stay in this world, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained his mission in a nutshell. He told Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy what he considered to be the main means of attaining Krishna Prema. And here it is. This is from the CC, Andhya 20, 13, 14. By performing congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, one can destroy the sinful condition of material existence, purify the unclean heart, and awaken all varieties of devotional service. The result of chanting is that one awakens his love for Krishna and tastes transcendental bliss. Ultimately, one attains the association of Krishna and engages in his devotional service as if immersing himself in a great ocean of love. End quote. In his manifest leelas, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had first trained his devotees in closed quarters at Srivasangam. No non-devotees were allowed in the kirtans. Not even Srivas Thakura's stepmother. After some time, the devotees were requested to engage in kirtan in their own homes. The Muslim government became alert and threatened to violently stop all further kirtan. They would not tolerate the spreading of Hinduism. This was not a threat which could easily be ignored. The invaders were known for their tortures and had proven on numerous occasions they would not spare even saints the most painful punishments one could imagine. Mahaprabhu's response was one of full defiance. He called for a mass civil disobedience Sankirtan demonstration, and chanting and dancing led a procession of hundreds of thousands of his followers down the banks of the Ganga to the house of the governor, John Kazi, and made him his follower. Mahaprabhu's followers then took the Kazi's sign, a moon that was slim on both sides, and put Vaishnav Tilak over it. Everyone thus knew the suppression of Sankirtan in Navadvip had been overcome. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Later, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared, "Those who chant in kirtan are protected by the Sudarsan chakra of the Lord." Srila Prabhupada, in the early days, you also chanted in closed quarters with your first followers. You wanted to make them strong and fortify them against inner and outer obstacles. Then you sent them out all over the world, trusting that Krishna would protect your, quote, Hare Krishna people. From time to time, you called us to your shelter during festivals like Rath Yatra, or when you visited our various countries. In your lectures, you always placed your main emphasis on the chanting of the Lord's holy names. The message was clear. Chant Hare Krishna, that's all. That was Prabhupada's quote. I don't think we need a reference for that. He didn't put one because Prabhupada said it how many times? I don't think anyone doubts that Prabhupada said that. If so, you can look it up on the Vedabase. But you'll see hundreds and hundreds. During our kirtans, you would often raise your arms, and then crowds of devotees and guests would go wild and dance with abandon. Once, during a well-attended public program in Königstein, Germany, a visitor got upset with the enthusiasm of the singing devotees and challenged you. This chanting is self-hypnosis. Calmly, you replied, no, it's self-purification. On your appearance day, I would like to request a blessing from you. O most merciful spiritual master, please cast a compassionate glance upon me. Somehow, you named me Sachinandan Das, servant of Sri Chaitanya, the son of Mother Sachi. I can understand more and more that the chanting of the holy names is your most valuable gift. Please ignore my numerous disqualifications and engage me more and more in your and Sri Chaitanya's mission of spreading the holy name. For this end, I beg you to empower my dry heart so that I can chant the holy name with love and affection. Then my efforts will be effective, and I may please you so that you smile happily in my direction. That's all I want. With lots of gratitude, your humble servant, Sachinandan Swami. Unfortunately, I have to stop. So many nice offerings here. Please take the opportunity to read the Vyasa Puja book and also the Prabhupada Tributes, the book that has been published. I haven't seen it yet, but it has been published online. And there are hard copies as well of all of Prabhupada's disciples' offerings as well. So I wanted to thank everybody that's here and that's listening or watching for serving Srila Prabhupada so nicely. If a rascal like me can be attracted to spending time in a community, certainly the community has to be very special. So this is one of my favorite places to be. I don't have a home, as I was saying previously, when we're talking about going back to home, back to Godhead. We were making the analogy of how it feels to be home. And so it's not so nice, Prabhupada, using that term. But I don't have a home. At the same time, I feel like I have many homes. And it's a little difficult sometimes, especially a home like this. It's so nice coming, but it's difficult leaving. And that happens a lot.
because we were traveling so much. So many nice devotees all over the world. So many nice big temples, small temples, congregations without temples. And it's always hard to leave. It's good practice, of course, because ultimately we have to leave everything. And we have to look forward. And it's true, there's always another home to look forward to. So this home is very special. And so many devotees made such nice arrangements, and they always do. And the preaching is so nice, and I can see how everything is expanding. Every time I come back, there's a new this or another that or a more perfected something. So I see how the devotees are so sincere. And last night it was very special for so many reasons, how all the devotees spoke. And also the first generation was there, the second generation was there, third generation was there. And it was so nice to experience that, because everybody that was there was concerned about spreading Krishna consciousness, and they all had heartfelt feelings. The young devotees, we call them the youth now, some of them are 35 years old. But you know, just like your mother will always think of you as a kid, no matter how old you are. So I don't know what we're going to call the new youth. At any rate, it was just wonderful having everybody there, and we're all focused on the same thing. And the more that focus is there on pleasing Srila Prabhupada and spreading Krishna consciousness, then we'll grow very, very nicely. The leadership, I have so much faith in, and all the rank and file devotees. So thank you so much for your association. And we're coming back. I always say, when people ask, they say, well, when are you coming back? And we say, the first. And it's true. First chance we get. So we'll certainly be back on the first. And if there's anything I can do in the meantime, also, please let me know. Shishi Radha Kalachanji Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi. One thing is, like we were saying, the book is online, so you can read it. But it's a little different when we churn the nectar together. Yeah, yeah. Also, whoever has a book that they found in the temple room that they didn't know whose it was, it's the book that was given to me. So if you have it, you have 24 hours to get it to me, because I'll be leaving. And otherwise, I know it's going for a good cause, so whoever's reading it, you have full blessings. Hare Krishna.